When you hear stories about poachers on the loose in the world today, it's easy to assume that they're half a world away, killing elephants and rhinos in Africa for tusks and horns. And yes, there's plenty of that activity. But there's a lot in our part of the world, too, and an upward trend, too, it would seem. Wildlife agencies, especially at the state level, are having issues getting a handle on the poaching of animals in the wild. Our EarthFix team looks at this and other issues in a series of reports called Wildlife Detectives, available now at IJPR.org and on the radio next week. The poaching angle is the focus of Tony Schick, one of our EarthFix team reporters, and he's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Tony, thanks for joining us for the debrief.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So give us an idea of the overall focus of the Wildlife Detective series.
Yeah, it had a pretty wide reach, actually. We had reporters working on shellfish poaching up in Puget Sound. We had folks looking at sturgeon poaching along the Columbia River. We had someone looking at hardwood poaching and the lab down in Ashland. And I was kind of taking an overall look, but I was mainly, my story was kind of taking place in south central Oregon, where there's a lot of mule deer poaching happening.
And what's the issue with mule deer? Are they just they considered a greater catch for a hunter or something?
In some ways, yeah, but also it's an area where they spend the winters and they're often at their most vulnerable, and they can be kind of an easy target in the winters for poachers who are wanting to you can spotlight a deer and go home with you know, several in a night, I heard, and that's kind of a big score.
For the folks who aren't up on the terminology, spotlighted deer is a literal term, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It's kind of like a deer in the headlights kind of thing, basically not playing fair.
All right, so that's one of the issues here, is that the techniques being used by the poachers, aside from seasons, are things that are not allowed in most hunting regimens.
Yeah, that is one issue. There's that, there's the issue of seasons, there's the issue of what deer you're taking. You know, if you're taking trophy bucks, or if you're taking does, you know, which can hurt a population even more because they're, you know, they're the ones that are breeding. So there's a lot of different issues at play.
All right. Now, just in general, in talking to the folks at ODFW, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, what are the overall trends that they are seeing just in hunting and fishing generally?
Well, licenses have been on the decline, you know, for the past few decades, but have kind of leveled out a little bit. Paid license holders, but they've been pretty surprised to find that at least in where I was in southern central Oregon, poaching has been happening, what they found, at a rate that surpasses legal hunting. They collared a lot of mule deer, and they were able to track how they died, and they found that more had died from illegal take than from legal hunters.
Really?
Yeah, they were quite surprised to see that, and, you know, it'd be really difficult to know if that exact rate holds true throughout the state because there's a lot of factors involved, but it definitely put this on their radar.
So are people just not willing to get the licenses? I'm trying to figure out where the poaching part of this comes into. Are they hunting out of season, hunting without a license, certainly using techniques, it sounds like, that are not sanctioned, but in the other two cases, what's the story?
Well, it's profitable. You can, you know, in some ways, for some areas where you want to hunt, you can be waiting many, many years for the tag to hunt there. And in other cases, you know, if you're not going out at night and spotlighting, it can be very difficult to get one of these big trophy bucks. So there are definitely incentives, and there are also financial incentives. You know, if you're going to poach a deer, and sell an antler set, you can make pretty good money off of it. You know, I've heard that trophy antlers can go for, you know, several thousand dollars.
Wow! So it almost does get back to the sort of ivory and rhino horn taking thing. Where is the value placed upon the antlers? Who buys them?
You know, it can go to antler dealers who would sell, you know, sell them as kind of art and antiques. Whether you make kind of antler chandeliers out of them or other art pieces. Or they can be sold, you know, as mounts, or, you know, if they can be chopped up into dog chews, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of different places they can go, but there's not that many people as far as I've been told that are really the market. It's kind of a small market, but a lucrative one.
Okay. So not a widespread one, but a couple people there with.
Well, it's kind of a specialized kind of a market.
Tony Schick from our EarthFix unit is on the exchange today. We're talking about the series of reports called Wildlife Detectives. He had a chance to go along with wildlife agents looking for poaching evidence and trying to catch the poachers in South Central Oregon. And Tony, when you say South Central Oregon, is this Lake County or Harney County, or where were you exactly?
Yeah, I was with troopers who patrol Lake, Klamath, and parts of Deschutes County. So that's where I was at.
All right. And when you mentioned that sometimes you have to wait years for a tag for mule deer, what's the system there?
It's a lottery system based on kind of how long you've gone without getting into your priority areas. And it's all, you know, it's based on how many tags they're able to issue is based on a lot of things like population counts. And so when populations are in decline, like they are now, the state is not able to issue as many tags as they like. And that means their budget suffers, and then they have, you know, fewer resources to protect the population. So it's, in some ways, it's kind of a vicious cycle, and poaching is contributing to that.
And what kind of price tag do they have on the actual getting of the mule deer tag?
I would have to check on that.
All right.
That's escaping me at this time.
All right. But the point is that it sounds like ODFW is tight on money anyway. It sounds like years of declines in hunting and fishing have probably sapped a bit of their license income, or at least held it sort of steady, which is not a great thing at a time when the population is growing.
Right, right. I mean, the agency faces a $32 million budget shortfall this year, and they're going to be seeing some cuts, and they've been definitely feeling the effects of that. And that could mean, you know, they fund the state police Fish and Wildlife Division, and that could mean additional cuts there as well.
So here's where talking about government money always gets interesting. Does the situation mean that ODFW is cutting programs or just not adding to them over time?
It means both.
Mm-hmm.
It means they've been cutting programs and not adding them. This year they could... nothing's been finalized yet, but they could be losing some programs and some staff in those programs. So it means fewer programs and also kind of hinders their ability to carry out the programs that they do have.
All right. So you mentioned that you spent most of your time in South Central Oregon. Is this the area of the greatest concern, or are there other parts of Oregon in talking to the folks at ODFW that they mentioned?
Well, they're concerned about poaching anywhere in the state. Something that was intriguing to me about South Central Oregon was that it was an area where they knew that poaching was happening at a surprising rate, and I wanted to kind of explore that. And what's also happening in Southern Oregon, as you know, with diminishing local law enforcement forces, state troopers and fish and wildlife troopers have increasingly kind of been taking on general law and filling that gap. And so when I was with fish and wildlife troopers, thinking, you know, they're going to be doing things like setting up cameras, waiting in the woods, and tracking poachers, they're responding often to things like burglar alarms, investigating arsons, doing traffic stop, DUIs, that sort of thing.
Really, just sort of doing general sort of public safety sorts of services that don't involve wildlife at all.
Right, right. And there's always kind of a mix, you know. You pull someone over for a certain traffic stop that doesn't seem related to fish and wildlife, and then you notice there's deer blood on the bumper or something like that. I mean, I was told that kind of thing happens. But it's definitely, for the most part, is something that, you know, is something more on their plate and can take away from time they get to spend tracking poachers, which can be pretty time-consuming, given that there are often no witnesses and it's out in the middle of nowhere, you know. So,
we have a question for you from a listener here. Steve and Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tony Schick from our EarthFix team. We're talking about wildlife poaching.
Tony, my question is, are the majority of these poachers actually eating the meat, consuming the animal, or are they just going after the racks and leaving the rest of the carcass out in the woods?
All right, good question. Thanks, Steve.
It depends. I mean, when I was out there, I ran into situations of both. But I was with Fish and Wildlife Police when they were tracking a poacher that they said would spotlight and then would cut the antlers off and leave and waste the animal. Um, So I know that there is a fair amount of that happening, but I couldn't say what's more likely than the other. I think even in cases where they're going off after the antlers, I think there's probably some use of the meat as well.
Okay, I'm still trying to understand. There are other kinds of deer in that same part of the region, right? Not just mule deer?
Right. Mule deer are you know, a prominent game species, and so that's just it's a species that they're paying a lot of attention to, and one that that's been getting poached at a pretty high rate.
All right, that is more important. The bigger get in the eyes of the folks who are going after them, and you'd mentioned that there are some concerns about animal populations. Do they have a pretty good count on mule deer in South Central Oregon, and some idea about how much poaching is affecting that population?
They do. It's been, you know, it's in the hundreds of thousands, but it's been on the decline from a, you know, peaks of, I believe, somewhere around 300 and some thousand down to around 2 and declining even more. And there are a lot of factors at play: habitat loss, disease, and poaching. It's not the only thing driving down the population, but it's certainly something that's further tipping the scale.
Tony, what are the penalties for poaching, and are they stiff enough to have any sort of deterrent effect on would-be poachers?
That was a question I asked of a lot of people, and it really depends on where you are. The penalties can be pretty stiff. There are restitution now for trophy animals that can be, if you poach a trophy buck, which is, you know, depends on how many points they have on their antlers, that can be up to, you know, $7,500, which is a pretty hefty fee. But the penalty you actually get largely depends on what county you're in and how it's going to be prosecuted and what the judges are going to decide. There are a lot of counties that don't really have the resources to prosecute fish and wildlife cases or other misdemeanor cases.
Is it just the district attorney staff time, that kind of thing?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I talked with as many district attorneys throughout Oregon and Washington as I could, and a lot of them said we don't handle them any differently than any other case. But a lot of them said, you know, look, I do not have the staff to be able to devote time to this. I have, you know, I have crimes against people and property that I have to deal with, and we'd love to prosecute them, but we just don't have the resources. There's also an issue of jail space. You know, in Lake County, they have 17 beds, and their district attorney there said, you know, pretty much all of those are involved in meth cases, and they don't have the ability to, you know, put someone in jail for a few nights for poaching, despite the fact that the officers there were saying that that's probably the best deterrent.
So, Tony, obviously the legislature could allocate more money and potentially put more wildlife agents out in the field. Is that being recommended? Is that something that the legislature would consider, even if it were recommended?
It's tough because, you know, there's only so much money to go around. There is, you know, the ODFW budget is up for consideration this session, and there are potential cuts to the fish and wildlife officers. They could lose, last I talked with their captain, it was up to 17 officers in a worst-case scenario this year, which is about 10% of what they have. And that would leave a lot of areas with, you know, perhaps, you know, one-man offices. Where I was in Lapine, that was a two-man office. And even there, they have, you know, days when nobody might be on. And so, you know, losing 17 would be a pretty significant loss. Again, that's a worst-case scenario. I haven't seen many proposals to beef up their ranks. I've only kind of heard about whether or not there's going to be deeper cuts.
All right. We'll keep an eye on how things go in the legislature and see what happens with the budget for ODFW. Tony Schick is a member of our EarthFix team, part of the Wildlife Detective Series, now on our website. You'll be able to hear it on the air during Morning Edition on our music services next week. Tony, thanks for joining us today for the debrief.
Hey, my pleasure.
All right, take care. Want to read a letter here from David in Happy Camp talking about the many things he sees that have caused people to go about poaching fish, and he puts poach in quotes. He says, the downriver people, offshore fishing fleets have decimated fish stocks. The downriver people net fish so much, not letting enough fish get upriver. So many reasons and issues, but still half the people here just poach. I do not want to get my people in trouble, but I don't want them to poach either. When I have called Fish and Game in California, they never return my call. You can see the people fishing from the roads and bridge, but no one is worried as no one is watching. Even some of the guides are letting visitors bag the fish that should be released. We as a society are now spending millions to restore salmon and steelhead, but overfishing is hurting. But it's not fair to stop some from fishing while others are immune to laws like the net fishing downriver. I would like to see a 5-year ban on all fishing so we could see if they will restock and recover. That from David and Happy Camp. So the last thought on our this morning's discussion of wildlife detectives.